Welcome to the Get Ready Podcast. In last week's show, the guys discussed the challenges most preppers will face when trying to bug out. They discussed bugging in, when to leave, and how to deal with reluctant family members. In today's show, they'll be talking about the bug out journey and what gear the guys plan on taking with them on their bug out trip. Let's jump right in as RB and JD cover modes of transportation using PACE. Primary, alternative, contingency, and emergency. Take it away, RB.
Okay, let's cover the last big topic, which is how to bug out safely.
So the PACE anagram that we used earlier to plan out where we could bug out to works just as well for how we're going to get there. So in most cases, our primary bug out transportation is going to be our car, right? But we should have an alternate means of transportation, a contingency plan, and an emergency backup.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about vehicles as that primary. You've got a few things that can make it hard to bug out in your daily driver. Let's talk about some of those. One, an EMP or a CME could destroy the computer chips in your car. Two, gridlock. Everyone's going to have the same idea. They're all going to be bugging out at the same time. And there could be abandoned vehicles, either from that EMP or CME knocking them out as they're driving, or people just getting stuck and realizing, hey, I can't get out of here, I'm gonna leave my vehicle. Three, bridges, roads, and infrastructure could be destroyed. Four, government lockdowns could restrict travel. And five, ambushes could happen at any point, especially the longer out you are from the SHTF event. So let's walk through all of those. What can you do to help protect against an EMP or CME?
So devices like the EMP shield could help.
Yeah, what do you think about the EMP shield?
So many variables. What make model is your car? How strong is the blast? Is your car running at the time? I don't think we're going to really know until it actually happens. But for a few hundred bucks, it's worth having in the off chance it actually does help.
Yeah, I agree. The best way to make sure that your vehicle isn't affected by an EMP or CME is to get an older vehicle that doesn't use computers or sensitive electronics. But here's the question, how old is old enough? During the 80s and 90s, Chevy and other truck manufacturers started replacing carburetors with fuel injected systems. So if you find a truck with a carburetor, then more than likely you're in good shape. However, there might be a few vulnerable parts in the starter system that you may want to have spares on hand for, and those older vehicles are super easy to work on, so they're pretty easy to replace yourself. But one thing I found interesting was that Jonathan Hollerman, who's written several prepping-related books on EMPs, and also he runs a prepping consulting business, he put out a video on Patreon with his recommended bug-out vehicle. In his mind, he thinks a 2008 to 2010 Ford truck, think F-150s, where the engine has been swapped out for a Cummins diesel engine, is the best bug-out vehicle. So his reasoning here is that the Cummins engine is the most reliable, durable engines ever built. It's completely mechanical. There's nothing that an EMP is going to damage in that engine. But the Dodge trucks that they came in were absolute junk. And the 2008 to 2010 Fords, they were great vehicles, but had terrible engines. So a love child between the two is apparently the holy grail for bug out vehicles, according to Hollerman. And he also advocates for whatever your bug out vehicle is, it should be your daily driver. Because if you just have an old truck sitting in the yard, what'll more than likely happen is a lot of that gas will gunk up the engine. It's just sitting there, the batteries die. There's a lot of things that could go wrong with a vehicle that's not being used every single day.
Interesting. All right, so let's say your vehicle's running. Will that even matter if the highway is cluttered with cars that have stalled?
Yeah, and normally the shoulder lane would be fine, but if you're driving and your vehicle shuts off, then a lot of people are just going to pull off on the shoulder, not realizing what's going on. I think back roads in this scenario are likely going to be a bit better just because there's going to be fewer people. So you're going to be able to weave in and out of stalled traffic.
It wouldn't hurt to have a vehicle that was beefy enough to push your way through a jam if you needed to either.
Yeah, that was a lot of doomsday prepper episodes, people armoring their vehicles and putting plows and stuff and retrofitting school buses to blast through vehicles. Yeah, or if you don't have kids, and you're into motorcycles, having a motorcycle or dirt bike might allow you to slip through the cars and trucks that are stalled. So a couple different ways to get through that. Okay, let's look at the second issue with bug out vehicles. So let's say a nuclear bomb goes off in several cities, not necessarily EMPs, but actually hits the cities themselves. Everyone is trying to evacuate as quickly as possible. So even the back roads are getting jammed up. What are your options here for bugging out?
Yeah, you might be able to get out if you can leave immediately. Again, back roads are your best bet. Have alternative routes planned and extra gas. Get a bike rack for your car and strap a mountain bike for every member of your family, just in case you need to ditch the car. If you live near a city, part of your bug out kit should be a radiation detector and some gas masks. Some duct tape to cover car air vents would be useful if you suspect you could be driving through a radiated or contaminated zone.
Yeah, that nuclear scenario is challenging because let's say there was a nuclear attack in a nearby city, but you're not in the fallout zone. So if you couldn't leave immediately, because let's say your family wasn't home at time, it took a little while for that to get home. And now because of the gridlock, it's been several weeks since the attack, you could run into a situation where martial law is declared. And when martial law is declared, even if they clean up the gridlock a little bit so that they can get critical vehicles through, they're going to be setting up checkpoints all around the area. And if martial law is declared, firearms will be temporarily banned. Let's say you've heard rumors that food and supplies are being confiscated at these checkpoints, and this is very possible under the Defense Protection Act, which prohibits hoarding. So what's your bug out plan now where you've got checkpoints all around your area?
So this comes back to pre-staging, right? Your firearms, your food, everything needs to be pre-staged at your bug out location. So that if you're going through these checkpoints and you're unable to have firearms with you or whatever, if they're going through people's cars, then you're going to get to where you need to go and be okay. I think the bigger problem is with martial law comes FEMA camps, and it's getting rolled up at these checkpoints and taken off to a camp. It is critical you do not end up in a camp.
Yeah, I think this is where intelligence gathering comes in a big way.
Uh-huh.
Like you've got to be talking with people. Maybe you're even using drones, binoculars as you're driving. For the most part, these type of checkpoints are going to have long lines. And as soon as you spot any instance of these type of things, you've got to turn around and find a different path. And sometimes that may be bugging out on foot if you can't get through on a road. But definitely talking to people, seeing where the points are. If the internet is up, that's also going to be a huge asset, because there's going to be traffic lights where you can take a look at what's going on certain roads. There's going to be all sorts of conversations on social media and have walkie-talkies and conversations with neighbors to figure out where the latest checkpoint is. You've really got to have a strong intelligence gathering operation and networking operation.
Agreed. All right. So what about ambushes? How do you avoid them?
Without law enforcement patrolling roads, you're going to run into ambushes sooner, probably rather than later. Your vehicle is super vulnerable to spike strips. We've talked about in depth on that security podcast. You can get your tire shot out. You could have people who want to rob you or take your vehicle, do a pit maneuver on you. You could run into different roadblocks, both from law enforcement and just people who want to charge a toll to get through there or steal your stuff. And then, of course, sniper attacks. There's very little you could do about sniper attacks. I think you can mitigate some of these with some tactics. For example, we've talked about run flat tires. We've just mentioned binoculars. You can have armed passengers if you're afraid of a drive-by or people trying to run you off the road to rob you potentially. But no matter what, once the rule of law is gone, the roads are going to be incredibly dangerous. You guys all know this by now. Bug out as early as possible, avoid sketchy areas, and proceed with caution.
This is one reason why having a retreat that is several hours away by car is very risky. If that's the case, you cannot wait until DEFCON 1 to bug out. You're going to want to bug out way earlier than everyone else. Maybe take a little staycation to your bug out retreat. There may be some false positives here, and that's okay. It's better to be wrong 100 times than you miss that one time and now you're stuck and your bug out location is so far away.
Yeah, and I'll also emphasize the difference between driving to your bug out location in your vehicle and every other alternate way of doing there is massive. So do anything you can to have a functioning vehicle. That might be EMP shield, it might be having an old bug out vehicle, it might be run flat tires, might be leaving right away. Whatever you have to do to make that happen, it's really important. Because now we're going to talk about the alternatives. That was the primary. We're going to talk about the alternatives, and you'll see pretty quickly that none of them are as good as a truck that can go off-road. Okay, so we've covered the primary bug out transportation pretty well, but what do you do if your vehicle won't work or if the roads are useless due to congestion or lockdowns? What are some ideas?
Well, this is where you've got to start getting creative. Four-wheelers, golf carts, boats, motorcycles, dirt bikes, paraglider, airplanes, anything is better than walking. Bicycles, huge.
I wish we had a true or false situation here. There's a lot of great, insane doomsday prepper episodes when it comes to bugging out. Anyway, I think the Amish have some very interesting ideas in terms of getting back to basics when it comes to transportation. Obviously, they have horses and carriages, but you may also see them using bikes and scooters on the road, especially with the kids.
Where does one get a tactical bug out scooter?
No idea.
Notice I put tactical in front of it because I will legitimately buy just about anything that has the word tactical in front of it.
Me too. I have no idea. I think alternate transportation really comes down to where you're at in life and what your family's interests are. I mean, you might be into scooters. Not everyone's going to be into scooters. I think dirt bikes would be a killer bug out vehicle if everyone on your family could ride a dirt bike, or if you're solo, right? That would be a really great idea. Motorcycle as well. If you live by the water, then the boat that you mentioned, that might make sense. If you had a lot of money, get a helicopter, right? It really depends on your situation quite a bit. Not everyone in the country lives at their bug out location. A lot of places in the country are definitely not viable, but people with land, they could have horses, or they might have a neighbor with a horse. So that might be an option. It really depends on your environment, your family, your financial means, your interests. But whatever it is, get creative and try to get an alternate vehicle because, like we mentioned, it gets worse going on from here.
Yeah, and bikes and scooters are going to fall into the contingency category. Maybe if they're gas or electric powered, they're an alternative. But transportation that relies on your body should be a contingency.
Yeah, very easy to think about. Primary is going to be your gas-powered vehicles or diesel-powered vehicles. Your alternate is going to be anything with a motor or an engine. Your contingency is going to be anything that's powered by your body. And obviously, if you've got a long trip, that's going to be very strenuous on your body, and it's going to take a long time. I would throw things like a shopping cart or a garden cart. I know Dr. Lee had mentioned wagons, that a garden wagon that you could pull. Great idea if you're in that contingency mode. But I think you definitely want some sort of trailer or cart to help carry the load. And with so many different affordable modes of transportation mentioned earlier, this should not be your go-to method for bugging out. It doesn't cost a lot to buy a four-wheeler or a side-by-side or have some of these low-tech but inexpensive motor. If you've got to go down to using your body and pulling something with wheels, you're either not preparing properly or things have gone badly wrong.
So that, of course, leaves walking as the emergency mode of transportation. We talked about the get home bag in depth from the last episode. What are some of the ways, RB, that the bug out bag is different?
Here's the big difference. When you're on a get home journey, speed and distance is primary, security is secondary. I think we hammered that home on the get home episode. But if you're going to be traveling, you're going to be traveling with at most a pistol and your bag is going to be on your back. But when you're bugging out, security is primary, speed and distance is secondary, and you're going to have your family with you. So I think, and this might be a little controversial, but I think that you need to have your battle rifle, your chest rig, and your battle belt with you, if not on you, during your bug out journey. And that means you're not going to be able to carry a 30-pound bug out bag on your back while you've got your battle belt on and your chest rig and an AR in your hand. You're going to need a small, lightweight assault pack that you can wear along with your chest rig and your battle belt. So this begs the question, like, how do you carry all of your food, your water, your sleep system, your shelter, your first aid kit, ammo, everything that you need to bring with you if you've got this tiny assault pack on your bag. I think you need some sort of cart in order to push in front of you as opposed to carrying all your gear on your back. And again, a lot of this concept comes from Hollerman's books because he's one of the few people that really dove into this in depth. And his suggestion is grab a shopping cart from a local grocery store. Great idea, but there's a few downsides of a shopping cart. First, they're loud. Second, you can't go off-road with it. You can't run with it. One nice thing is they are pretty big, so you can definitely fit a lot in it. If you've got small kids, they can ride in there. So there's some upsides, but there's definitely some downsides. I think there's a better solution though, and that would be a bike trailer / stroller combo. So if you're not familiar with what these are, they are three-wheel strollers that are typically meant for a small child to sit in. You can get them so that two children can sit side by side, but you don't need to have kids in order to have a stroller. You can fill your stroller with your food, your water, your sleeping gear, your ammo, everything that you need to take with you, and then you're pushing that. And what's nice about this is you can take turns pushing it with your wife or your husband or your adult children, so you're not always bearing the load. You can have an AR in your hand while your wife is pushing the gear down the road. You're very mobile, so that if you get snuck up on, you can leave all that on the road, jet off to the woods to try to escape. And better yet, if you've got bikes, you can hook that to the back of your bike and, of course, use it as a trailer. So if you think of your bug out vehicle, having a bike rack, having this fold up inside the back of your trunk, and then if you have to abandon the vehicle, let's say you hit gridlock or you get a flat tire, you run out of gas, whatever, then you can grab all your gear, grab your bikes, load them up on the trailer, and get going. JD, what do you think about this approach?
Yeah, I love this. Just looking at it on Amazon, it looks like everything you'd want in a push cart. The ability to put things, including kids if you need to, but if you are going to put some supplies in there, looks like there's a lot of space as well. So you could probably put some supplies with your kids. You can zip it up in case it's cold. You can hitch it to a bike if you need to. I love everything about it. I love the fact how compact it goes when you store it away. This makes way more sense to me than a shopping cart. Try push a shopping cart. Like pushing the shopping cart from inside Home Depot to your car is a nightmare. It's like bumping all over the place. And, you know, imagine trying to do that for miles and miles and miles on end.
Imagine having a dirt road or a gravel road that you've got to get through.
Forget it.
No, it's not going to happen.
Forget it. And your kids want to sit in the cart as well because, you know, they're tired. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. And you're going downhill and it's pulling you downhill because it's got a lot of weight in it. These actually have brakes in it. At the end of the day or the night, whenever you have to pull over for set up your camp, you can just drive this right through the grass into the woods. The shopping cart is going to be a real big pain to get however far off the road. There's a lot of advantages, and it's not that expensive. I mean, you're looking at maybe $200, maybe you get a high-end one, it's $300, maybe a cheap one's $150. Great solution if you've got young kids. Even if you don't have young kids, I still think there's a lot of value there. Okay, the other big thing, as I mentioned, was you're going to have your family with you. And that dynamic is going to change a few things from your get-home journey. Primarily, there are some things that you can share as a group. So for example, each member of your family obviously should be carrying their own pack with their own food, their own water, and clothing. However, food and water could be carried in this stroller. As Dr. Lee mentioned a few episodes back on medical, you could get away with one big first aid kit for the group. You don't need to have individual first aid kits for every single person, but you may want to have a little bit of extra of everything in your first aid kit since you'll be using it for the whole family. So you're going to go through a lot more band-aids, a lot more blisters, a lot more cuts and boo-boos. So just have a bit of a beefier multi-person first aid kit, but you can just have one, keep it in the stroller or keep it in your assault pack.
Yeah, the same is probably going to go for water filtration, fire starting kit. You know, you'd have one kit, but more of everything. You're just going to need more.
Mm-hmm. You've got some options with sleeping and shelter. You could do one big tent if depending on the size of your family. The problem with these like 4, 6, 8 person tents is they get very heavy. So you have to trade off that. The flip side is if you have young kids or really maybe any kids, there is some security risk in having them in their own separate tent. there might be advantages of having them all in a single tent, or you could do a very large tarp if you're doing a tarp shelter. There's a couple different ways you can go with it. What are your thoughts on shelter in this situation?
Security is your primary concern. You're not going to be able to take that much. So whatever's light and gives you the ability to, you know, get some warmth and shelter going, you're gonna want to have.
I think this is a key difference, especially in your system, between getting home and bugging out. Because in your system, I think you take the Spartan approach, right? I'll just grin and bear it. If it gets cold, I'll deal with it. Does that apply for your wife and kids as well? Or do you need to have a better shelter solution for the family?
I think you're able to bring maybe some more stuff when, you know, if you get everyone carrying their bags, say, and in their bag is some items like clothing, and if you can diffuse the load a little bit, you probably could, you know, carry a few more things. But it's different in that, you know, especially if you're bugging out and security is the main issue. So let's say you've got your AR that's loaded up. Are you wearing body armor? Do you have your battle belt on? Let's just say AR plus body armor, you're sitting at over 20 pounds on your person that you're now having to like cover a lot of ground with. Like, it still is a Spartan approach to getting to where you need to be.
I think in this situation, invest in the stroller so that you can carry a larger tent and use that for your family.
Yeah, I mean, my reality is that my whole crew is going to be complaining anyway. So you may as well go minimalist. Like, if you're going to whine, then, you know, I'd rather do it without, like, breaking my back.
Love that perspective. Okay. What else do you think is going to be one of the big differences between getting home and bugging out?
Yeah, so a few episodes back, we had Patrick Adams talking about communication during a bug out. And he had a few suggestions on how to communicate with your retreat group. And if you're listening to this and you haven't heard that episode yet, you really ought to. It is a game changer in terms of organizing, information gathering, information sharing, getting help maybe. Definitely go out and listen to it. That was episodes 7 and 8. So go check that out.
Well, I'm glad you brought up communication because I've been looking into the navigation options for the bug out specifically. I was so close to getting a Garmin inReach or one of the GPS map versions of that, but I didn't. And the reason I didn't is because I remember Patrick talking about satellite phones not working in an EMP or CME. I really didn't understand why that was, but I looked into it a little bit and I get it now. So here's what I learned. When you make a call from a satellite phone, the phone hits the satellite, but before it hits the receiver phone, it actually sends a message down to a ground station on Earth to see if your phone has an active subscription and how many minutes it has available. If there's no active subscription, if there's no minutes, your call isn't getting through. Now, if that ground station sends the all clear signal to the satellite, meaning you've got minutes, your contract is active, then it bounces that signal from that satellite off to a satellite in the region of the user. And then that second satellite again hits the ground station, checks if the receiver has minutes and an active contract. And if so, then it allows the communication to proceed and the other person picks up and you can make your call. So if the ground station near you or the ground station near the receiver is offline because of a hack or a CME or it got blown up or any of those issues, or if the satellite themselves are affected, your call is not getting through. And the same goes for satellite navigation. None of those Garmin devices are going to work. You're out of luck. So I think for the most extreme cases, you should not rely on satellite navigation. You should instead have paper maps printed out, laminated, and you've got to do it by hand. Or if you do the route enough to where you do it by memory, that's even better.
It sounds like either your cell phone works and you don't need sat phones for navigation, or neither work, in which case there's no point in having that sat phone.
Exactly. Yeah, so if my phone works, then I'm just going to use my phone for navigation. As long as I'm not out of cell tower range, if I'm in the far back country, then satellite phones and satellite navigation makes sense. But I'm not going to be bugging out through the mountains. I'm going to be bugging out through places that have cell coverage. So if my phone's working, great, I'll use Google Maps to get where I'm going. If my cell phone doesn't work, then it's probably an EMP or CME that's taking it out, and the satellite versions aren't going to work either. you're much better off bringing a power bank to recharge your phone and your night vision and your thermals and any other devices in the off chance that your phone does work. If it doesn't work and none of your devices work, you can just ditch the power charger, ditch the phone, ditch the devices, and you're back to where you would be anyway. So I talked a lot about traveling on the road during the get home journey, but does the same hold true for the bug out journey? Or do you think it's going to be safer traveling through the woods or some variation off the road?
There's no ways I'll be walking through the woods. If I step into the woods and I don't see a road or something like where I've come from behind, like my butthole immediately puckers. It's just, I am very uncomfortable. I think it's coming from Africa. I just get the feeling there's so much in there that could be eating me.
Lions behind every bend.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but there's a lot of downside in the woods. It's slow. You can twist an ankle. Seriously speaking, it's going to be pretty easy to get lost if you're not familiar where you are. I'd be less afraid of bears and more afraid of things like stray dogs in an SHTF situation.
Yeah.
I think the dog thing is very real. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a dog and no one's going to be able to take care of them. And I don't know if you've ever seen a pack of feral dogs. It's pretty gnarly. I think they're going to go where they can hunt, and that's the word. So, and if you are, you're going to need a map and a compass and some level of familiarity with being in backcountry. So for the most part, you're going to want to stick to the main roads and highways while walking. It could be harder to ambush someone on a major highway. Maybe, I mean, as I say that now, I think especially if their car's strewn about all over the place, that may not be the case. You should at least be able to spot things that look out of place because you've got a long field of vision versus skipping through the woods and just not being able to see much around you. There's also a chance there's going to be a lot of people walking on the roads, which might make you blend in. A lot of variables, a lot of unknowns here, but you know, I think for speed of getting to your location, you're going to want to stick to the roads. And, you know, it's not to say you're not going to be getting off of the road, especially when it's time to bed down. You're not going to bed down on the road or where in plain sight, but you won't be doing the majority of your traversing through wooded areas or mountainous areas.
Yeah. And a couple of the comments about the woods. I mean, you mentioned wild dogs. I think of coyotes, and a pack of coyotes could attack people very easily. We had some great stories and photos shared on Telegram, our Telegram channel, about just that. Depending on what part of the country you're in, you might have wolves, you might have mountain lions or cougars that could take you out. And also hunters. There's going to be a lot of people who are hunting deer, trying to store up on meat. And how are those hunters going to take it when they see you and your family walking through their land, scaring away their deer, and you've got a pack full of supplies on their back? No law enforcement. It would be pretty tempting for them to take a shot at you. Let's talk a little bit about what time of day you should be traveling. So in the Get Home episode, we talked about traveling during the day, during the first 2 to 3 days, then traveling only at night. What about for the bug out trip?
Yeah, if your family is home when SHTF hits and you don't have to do a get home journey, then the same thing applies, you know? If the get home journey took several days and you're bugging out, say, after day 3 of the event, then yeah, you're only going to be traveling at night with no flashlights, no fires unless it's an emergency. Binoculars are really important. Any kind of night vision or thermal is a game changer. You're going to want to move around in the dark quietly so that you're not going to attract any attention and that you're going to be able to avoid any danger as it might present itself. What you don't want is to get caught up in any kind of violent confrontation on your bug out journey, especially if it's just you and your family.
I think one of the big takeaways for me as I'm researching and thinking through my bug out journey is the importance of having some sort of cart or wagon or stroller that can carry my gear for me. But let's say that I do have one of these items that I'm pushing or pulling, and all of a sudden it's late at night, I see a group of people approaching. What should I do? What do you think? Should I be trying to take that cart and wagon and pull it off the road? Should I abandon it? What's the protocol when you've got a lot of stuff that's going to be difficult to escape with?
Everybody needs to know what they have to do, right? First things first is you want if you're with your family, they need to get to safety first, which means getting out of the way and hiding, preferably taking some form of cover, not just concealment. And then, yeah, if it's safe to do so, you've got to get your stuff off the road. But if it's a, you know, a group of men and they're too close, then obviously don't get killed over your stuff. But everyone's got to have a head on a swivel. And the whole idea is to avoid anything before it actually happens.
Yeah, I think this is why binoculars and night vision and thermal is so important, because you've got to spot them before they can spot you. If they see you and they see you scurry off the road, you've lost the element of surprise and they could pin you down with fire and then steal your stuff. Like you said, I think the best thing is to set an ambush. So they walk up to your cart, your stroller, they start looking around it, then you jump out at them and really catch them off guard. And it's something you got to practice, something you got to be prepared for ahead of time. Okay, so if I were to wrap up what we've talked about walking on foot, I would say sleep during the day, travel at night, avoid people, don't set any fires, don't travel through any towns or big population areas, get an off-road stroller to carry the majority of your bug out gear, but then have a small true bug out bag, which is more of an assault pack, that's just going to have the core essentials with you that you're going to be wearing all the time, along with keeping your AR on you, your battle belt on you, and then your chest rig or plate carrier and plates when you get into more sketchy areas. And probably the big thing is try not to die. Did I miss anything, or is that a pretty good summary of where we're at?
No, that's a great summary.
All right, cool. Let's wrap this episode up with today's mission. You want to do that?
Yeah. So since we didn't get to do a mission on the getting home episode, we're going to cover getting home and bugging out in today's mission. So your mission is to put together a get home bag and store it in your vehicle. And if you haven't listened to the previous episode, you're going to want to, because we go deep on what should be in your get home bag. You should also walk a few miles with your get home bag to make sure it's comfortable and manageable, and time yourself. See how long it takes for you to walk those miles. Make sure that the shoes that you're going to be wearing are the ones that are either in your pack or next to your pack in your car, and that they hold up over a significant distance. The next part of the mission is something that I am going to be doing, preferably with RB, if and when we see each other soon, and it needs to be in winter, because I really, and we need to get a bet going. Like, I don't know.
It's going to happen. I think
it's going to happen, but we need a bet. Well, I want you to you don't drink alcohol. So maybe like you have to take a shot or something.
Let's do a poll on Telegram on what the stakes should be. So we're going to do this in the dead of winter in December or January.
And we'll keep each other honest. Yeah. If you guys want to come up with some creative bets, that would be great. All right. So test your shelter and your sleep system. You're going to test it in winter, test it in summer, test it in the rain, and make sure that you have something that's going to be effective. All right, come up with a pace plan for bugging out locations and discuss it with your family. Hear what they have to say. And then review the prepper DEFCON levels with your family, along with some examples, so they know what to do in a given scenario. And then put together your bug out bag. So this can be based on your get-on bag, but it should contain some of the differences that we discussed in this episode, things that you would need to get you to your retreat versus just getting you home, and keeping in mind you're probably going to be doing that with your family versus making your way home by yourself. And that is your mission.
Well done. That's it. We've wrapped up part 10 of our How to Get Prepared for a 90-Day SHTF Event series. And this is some big news, everyone who's listening. We are going to take a couple weeks off to plan out what season 2 should look like. Now, most people don't realize this, but it actually takes a lot of time to research each topic, write down the show outline, record the show, edit the show, and engage with our amazing Telegram community. So producing an hour-long show is doable each week, but once we start getting into the holiday season where we're traveling, it's really hard to make our schedules line up so that we can record and put something out every Monday. So we're going to take a few weeks off. We're going to regroup after the holidays. We plan to come back with season 2. And we really want to know, what do you think the theme of season 2 should be? You can share your thoughts on our Telegram channel, t.me/getreadypodcast. We've got over 100 preppers and fans of the show over on there that are kind enough to give us some real-time feedback on how to make this show better, and we'd love for you to join that community. Thank you from all of us for supporting the podcast. Thank you for leaving us ratings and reviews. And most of all, thank you for listening. JD, anything you want to say?
No, I think you summed it up well. This has been awesome. We're looking forward to season two. Have a great Christmas and a happy new year.
And with that, Jeffries, we'll see you out.
J. William Fulbright said, "We must dare to think unthinkable thoughts. We must learn to explore all the options and possibilities that confront us in a complex and rapidly changing world. At some point in the future, our world will experience another crisis. It may be in the form of another world war, a serious pandemic, a powerful solar flare, or any number of unthinkable events. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to dare to think unthinkable thoughts. This is what sets you apart from the rest. You've been given a window of time. Use it wisely. Are you ready?"